put a spell on you. Cause you're mine.
Welcome to Hex Rated, where we four witches will take you on a magical journey through foul language and outrageous feminism. And maybe a little witchy shit.
No,
I can't stand
it. You're running around. You know
better die. Okay.
That's good. Hi.
Neato.
Hi.
Hello. Coming at you. Why do I always say that? No. This is Hex Rated, and I don't know what this is going to turn out to be, but I am Blackbird.
I'm Scarlet.
We are talking about things. You spent the weekend in a treehouse, which I need to know about right away.
Okay, let me tell you about it. So,
I need to know.
So I wasn't having a birthday party this year, since, you know, quarantine. So I decided to take three of my friends and my husband to go spend a weekend in a treehouse outside of Austin, so like about an hour outside of Austin. And it's pretty hipster glamping, like very fancy treehouses, but it was super duper magical. I mean, it was hipster in that you get in there and they have like mason jars in the little kitchenette to drink out of.
Aww.
And like all the lamps are like Edison bulbs. But the thing that I found very enchanting about it was it was spread out between three or four trees.
Yeah.
So you had one little house part of it that was a kitchenette that had a sink and a hot plate and a kettle and a fridge that is somewhere in between the size of a whole fridge and a mini fridge.
Right.
And then there was another little area that had two small bedrooms and a little vestibule kind of sitting area. And then there were also all these multiple other spaces. So there was a stairway up. So there was like a ledge and a porch, and then there's a stairway up, and then there's a large ledge with some planters and trees, and then there's like a little bridge, and there's more like little areas you can climb, and then there's a higher level where you can get, and they have like a little perch, and to get across from, you know, where you park your car, there's a little kind of rope bridge that's a little bouncy. And there was a bathroom as well with like a full, it was a really nice clean bathroom with, you know, a shower and a tub and a toilet and a sink, and it was across the rope bridge. So
I was gonna ask, is the bathroom like community bathroom for your little surrounding of treehouses?
No,
basically?
It is. It's for this complex of
okay.
treehouses.
Got it.
So the five of us were sharing it, but it was not like community,
right?
So yeah. It was super cute, caged in, right?
That was cool.
Well. Yeah, it had a sort of, and we'll post pictures because this is obviously makes more sense in a visual format instead of me describing it. But it was basically, there were several very, very large trees that were growing up out of this sort of small ravine or like deep creek bed. So there's like a little creek directly underneath us, and then these pretty steep, I'd say, I don't know, 30 foot or more pretty sheer rock faces.
Mm.
And then these trees that go up from there. So there was this sort of metal, I don't want to say a grid because it curved over, but basically there was like a half cylinder of like metal grid.
Mm-hmm.
That went from across the ravine, and so that was providing some support from above. So some things were moored you know, to the trees and to each other or directly to the ground across, but some were moored from above. So there were multiple, so it was really, really solid. So the things that did not feel solid that were like swaying was the little rope bridge.
Right.
And then a few of the smaller structures, like these little perches you could climb up on, those would kind of a little bit sway in the breeze.
Right.
But the actual plate, like the sleeping and in dining spaces, were really solid because they're built around a tree trunk, like a traditional treehouse. And then some of them were cantilevered to either the rock face or from above to this structure above. But I mean, we're talking about a wide grid of like, you know, metal. So it wasn't like, you know, chicken wire or something where it's like blocking the view of the canopy or anything. It sounds really complicated, but basically
it looks like in the pictures, it looks like you're inside a giant aviary, which I don't think is the case, but that's what it looks like.
Yeah, it's a lot more open than that. Right. But it basically that element was, I think, mostly structural.
It looked amazing. Did you have a great time?
Yes, it was super delightful. It was exactly like what you would have wanted as a child for a treehouse.
Oh my gosh.
So, of course, running around it as an adult, like a little dork. Like, if you do not have a childlike sense of wonder, you would probably be like, why would I pay this amount of money?
Whatever.
To be in a hotel room where there's no microwave and I have to walk across a rope bridge to go pee. But I thought it was super delightful and magical and very creative. I mean, obviously, like, a lot of thought went into the design just so that there's, like, some structural integrity. Obviously, you have to work with the landscape that is there.
Right.
To make it work between these trees. But I thought that the different levels and having the different sort of rooms be their own little kind of pods that are connected was really, really fun. I mean, it's just delightful to like open up a little door and go through like a little porch area and then a little kind of wooden bridge to get to other parts, just like you're clambering up and down. But it also felt very safe. I mean, they had you know, wire guardrails across open spaces and you know, mesh so that you never felt like you were gonna like pitch off the side or something. There was a set of stairs that was quite steep, and so the space in between the stairs was probably like 5 or 6 inches, so you definitely could not slip and pitch in between the steps. But it, I mean, when you're above a ravine, it does feel like dauntingly open, even though I know that like there's no way I could fit through there. Like, even if I totally ate it on these stairs, I'm not gonna like go flying in between these slats. But that's kind of part of the fun. I used to be mildly afraid of heights as a child, and then I started doing like pole and aerial silks and stuff, and so I got over it. My desire to show off is much greater than my fear of heights, so I got over it.
Yes. Will you share with listeners the name of the place? Because I know we have a lot of people in Texas.
It's called Cypress Valley. Like I said, it's pretty pricey, so I went as sort of a splurge and split it between 5 people. So, and we were there for 2 nights. And the area, of course, if you're familiar with Texas, it's outside of Austin, so the hill country, so it's very beautiful. But you're also not like in the middle of nowhere. So, you know, there's like within 15 minutes, there's cute little cafes and restaurants. Within 30 minutes, there's, you know, more civilization of convenience stores and a broader range of restaurants and things. And then about 45 minutes away is the city of Austin. So you're not in the middle of nowhere. And we had they didn't have Wi-Fi there. But we had perfect cell reception, so
nice.
That wasn't a problem.
Well, it looked magical, and I am really, like, the next trip I take, like, I don't even want to see anybody. I just want to go to this treehouse, like, with some people I like, and hang out.
Well, the funny thing was, originally, I was jokingly like, we should go to a treehouse.
Not a joke.
And I was saying, yeah. And but I was saying, oh, my husband won't want to go because he doesn't like nature. He's, you know, he just, he, well, he's, which sounds terrible, but what I mean is that he is very finicky about the temperature control where he's at.
Right.
He's very squicked out by bugs. Yes. He's also very photosensitive. You know, he burns very easily. He doesn't want to be under direct sunlight.
Yeah, I think we're married to the same guy.
Right, they're stomach twins for sure.
Yes.
And he also is very delicious to stinging insects. Yes. They come straight for him.
Same.
So these are all reasons why he doesn't really like want to be in nature.
Right.
But I was like, well, I mean, would you want to go to a treehouse? And he's like, well, yeah, that sounds pretty cool. And I was like, but you don't like nature. And he's like, well, yeah, but I'd be in the treehouse. And I was like, but you wouldn't go out in nature? He's like, if you're going to be in a treehouse, you spend the weekend in the treehouse.
It's like, I'm already like, in nature in the treehouse. Yeah.
But I was like, no, you're right. If you're going to go stay in a treehouse, like it's the experience of being in the treehouse. Because, of course, I immediately am like, oh, what are all these like kind of day trips that we can do? And we went to a park. I think it's a private park. Mm. I'm not sure. But there's like a beautiful... there's hiking and biking trails. They also have like rock climbing because the river valley there has these like very sheer rock faces, but there's this beautiful like pebble, almost sand beach that you can go down and people can swim and boat and stuff, which it was a little, we went at the perfect time.
Yeah.
Because temperature wise, it was great. Yeah. It was like a little cool in the mornings, but in the afternoons it was only in the 70s. So yeah, it was like perfect temperature. The treehouses have like AC units and fans in the rooms, and they also have some like portable little heaters. Mm-hmm. Which we would use the heater like first thing in the morning in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But in general, like, we didn't have to do any, we just cracked the windows so there would be some airflow.
Right.
And of course, when you're in bed, you're, you know, all bundled up, so it was lovely. There was no we didn't get too hot or too cold at any time. Summer would probably be pretty rough, but winter probably wouldn't be that bad. They just had like this cute little, they had the kind of space heaters I have at my house where it looks like a little old timey wimey, like cast iron, furnace,
right?
But it's electric and it has like a little fake flame or whatever. So it was delightful.
Those work great.
It was totally
though.
Delightful.
Yeah. It sounds magical.
Awesome. And it was very efficiently laid out. I mean, it was very charming. Like I said, some of the aesthetics of it were sort of hipster. But the little kitchenette was great. It was like a little sink. And, you know, they had dishes and utensils. And they had a cute little hot water kettle. Nice. And we were all kind of commenting because it was laid out very spatially efficient. Mm-hmm. And, like, it was very charming to have this very pared down sort of setup.
Yeah.
Where it was pretty glamping. I mean, like, you had all your amenities, but also like everything's very petite, so if you're very into that tiny house aesthetic, that sort of thing,
right,
it's very efficient and pleasing, but also still very aesthetic and not like, you know, I don't know, it had a very cute aesthetic and it was just delightful to be in the trees.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. I look forward to a time when I can do that. So there is a place on an island in Washington State that is like full on treehouse, and I really want to do that. And it's pretty far away from any kind of like stuff. I think there's a little town you can drive to that has a movie theater and some restaurants and stuff, but it's like, you know, 15-20 minutes away, and you gotta, you know, get out of the trees and stuff. But like drive out. I'm not saying you just walk to town, but yeah, I wanted to do that for my 50th birthday last year, but good old COVID. So maybe, I don't know about this year, but maybe next year. But yeah, I look forward to a time when I can also share pictures and stories about treehouses.
I did get to show off my witchy expertise. Yay. Because there was lots of xeriscaping around, so, you know, native plants and things. So there was, or low water, things you don't have to add extra water to is what xeriscaping means. But so I was able to identify several of the flowers. There were also some wild nightshades growing.
Oh, nice.
I need to look up one of them. It has a purple flower, and it's called like a silver leaf, something or other. But, you know, I got to be like, oh, that's this. And then, you know, they had, they had jasmine growing in some of the planters, and it smelled divine.
I have it right outside my bedroom window, and it is literally
the
best. Yeah.
It was amazing. And also when we went to this park, they had a bunch of wild poppies, which was very magical.
Yes.
Those are fantastic. So, I got to use a little bit of witch expertise with that. The thing that I would do if I did it again is, one, I'd like to go with some witchy people, because I think doing some meditations or rituals or something up in those trees, because there were like open platform areas that were kind of big enough to do stuff. And then there was a very cute little sort of crow's nest perch that probably was, I don't know, like 6 feet in diameter. So, you know, maybe three people could sit up there, and so there would be enough space to do stuff or to do a meditation. And the other thing, just personally, that I would have rather done is in that little crow's nest, I brought a blanket and a pillow up there to take like a little nippy nap, and it just wasn't quite enough. I wish I had brought like a sleeping bag or something, because it would have been delightful to, especially because you're up, you're in a tree. Yeah. Bugs were less of a problem than I anticipated. There were no mosquitoes. We had moths.
Yeah.
We kept having moths flying around the lights.
Sure.
But there wasn't, ants weren't a problem. And, you know, like stinging insects weren't a problem.
Yeah,
so sleeping outside would have definitely been an option. So bringing like a sleeping bag or something comfy to lay on up there would have been awesome.
Maybe we should plan a thing for.
We should.
Yeah, I'm down. I would fly down to do it.
So yeah, trying to veer this into the topic of witchcraft.
That's
obviously.
Okay. Well, I mean, what? I think magical trips are fucking magical. Whether you're with, you know, witchy type people or not, there's a thing that you can find about the place, you know, that you're constantly surveying it in a different perspective. You know what I mean? It's not just a trip with friends. It's, you know, you can turn anything.
Well, and I mean, in fairness to the people I was with, they certainly are very into nature and experiencing it and being mindful and present and savoring that location. It's just, if I had wanted to do like a ritual or, you know, something with like a little bit of ceremony to it,
I probably would have just done it by myself. But like, y'all, I'm gonna be over here doing witch shit, being in a little bit. No, right? Yeah, that's awesome. What a cool thing.
Yes, it was very delightful.
I did some things with plants this weekend. I bought a dwarf pomegranate tree based on your excellent. Now, I will say, I don't know if it's dwarf. It says patio, but in nowhere on the tag did it really say dwarf, so I guess we'll find out. But right now it is in a pretty giant pot, and it's happy in its little sun. It gets a lot of sun and it seems very happy. And I also got these absolutely stunning, like, deep purple calla lilies. Oh my gosh.
Oh,
I didn't
gorgeous.
Even know they came in that color. They're literally gorgeous, and I'm pretty sure I posted it to Hex, like the story on Instagram. So, whatever, they are gorgeous. Let's see, I got a whole bunch of new succulent cuttings from a friend of mine, and I planted all those. I did a lot of garden stuff yesterday, and then when I was done with the garden stuff in the morning, I started out to conquer one of my largest fears in baking, which is laminated dough croissants. So,
oh my god, so I'm dying to hear about this, because I fucking love croissants.
I mean, who doesn't
and,
love croissants? Oh my god,
They're the greatest. So, and they seem super super complicated to me, so I completely understand your perhaps almost superstitious, healthy respect for diving into baking them. So tell me all about that. I need to know everything.
Well, that's literally what it has always been for me. Just watching people, and I've watched 1,000 shows where people, you know, laminate dough, and I'm just like, that looks like a lot of work. I don't think I want to do that ever. I mean, you know, like, I also was scared to death of making sourdough, and now I could probably make it in my sleep, which is why I kind of said, well, if I'm going to ever, like, feel like I really, you know, like, I could bake anything. And I'm, again, let's put baking and decorating in two different categories, because I am no cake decorator. Honestly, my cakes are always, they always turn out kind of dry. So, I don't know. We'll talk about cakes another time. But, like, I just wanted to, like, prove I could do this. So, I decided to use the same book that I've been using for the sourdough, which is Chad Robertson's Tartine Bread. He is a guy out of San Francisco whose bread is absolutely amazing, and I have been making it for, about 7 or 8 months now? Since, like, late last summer, I started making it, and I kind of make it every weekend. So I thought, well, I will try his croissant recipe, because why not start out with one of what seems to be, like, the hardest recipes? And that way, if I change to another recipe, at least I've done it the extremely hard way. So you have to start with not only levain, which is your sourdough starter and a mix of flour and water, but then you also make a poulish, which is flour, water, and dry yeast. So you need basically two active agents. So you use, measure everything in grams. So you use almost the same, a little bit more, I can't remember. I think it's a little bit more levain than poulish, but you mix that together. And of course that takes all night for those to be ready. So those were ready like sometime Saturday day.
Okay. This is going to be a dumb question, but can you walk me through exactly what sourdough starter is? Because I know that it's alive, and I know in the past episode you had to go and like turn it over and things.
Oh,
but explain what it is and like how it works.
Sure.
And like, I don't know where you get it and what you do in between like kneading it for bread and not just letting it. I don't know. I have no idea.
Do you want to do that now, or do you want to do a whole episode on sourdough?
Okay, let's do a whole,
Let's table that, because that is in and of itself like a very long process.
Okay.
So let's just say that I had two different kinds of active, like, leavens, basically. Mix those together, then you add more flour and milk, room temperature milk, and some sugar, some salt, some more yeast. I think that's it on ingredients. There might have been one more thing, but nothing, you know, nothing fancy or outstanding. It's just like your basic bread ingredients. Then you mix that together, and the dough that it produced was quite stiff, like pretty stiff. Definitely not smooth or silky. It was, it felt like it might have been too dense. I don't know. It just seemed like it needed more liquid, but I didn't. I followed the recipe. It was just like, nope, I'm going to do it by the recipe this time. Well, then you turn it like you would sourdough dough, which involves like waiting a half an hour and then like pulling it up from the bottom of the container that it's in and pulling it kind of over itself. And you do that like 4 times. So you pull up, and what you're basically doing, and somebody's out there is going to go, that's not what you're fucking doing, but it might be, I don't know. I think you're like stretching the gluten, you know, so that it forms a better bond. Plus you're like, kind of mixing it. And this is a process that is in place of kneading, basically. It's like you're doing bulk fermentation. So this doesn't require any kneading. You're just turning the dough every 30 minutes. Sourdough is much longer. You do it for 3 hours. This was just 1.5 hours. So a turn every 30 minutes, and then you put it in the fridge. I'm trying to remember, but I think I'm doing the right steps. Then you chill it. Is that right? I think you like roll it out into yes, that's right. You roll it out into a 12 by 20 rectangle And then you chill it for like 3 hours, which is a long time. It was like midnight before I was done with the dough. So then once you've chilled it, you take it out. Wait, I'm missing the butter step. Okay, so the butter. So you take a whole box of butter, unsalted. And this is your dough.
Always a great recipe when it calls for a pound of butter.
Pound of butter.
I'm so on board.
It's basically 3.5 sticks, but I mean, close enough, right?
We'll round up.
I did not round up for the recipe, but yes, you might as well. But while your dough is still chilling, you're about ready to get ready to start the lamination process. You get some butter out, cut it into cubes. And if it wasn't like 10 o'clock at night, you pound the shit out of it to make it into like a rectangle, basically. You're trying to mimic the shape of the bread dough. Now, it's not going to be as big. You're not going to roll it out to be as big. And he gives dimensions in the recipe. So you're just trying to make it like rectangle enough to fit kind of inside your big square of dough. So this part is complicated because...
What thickness is it? Like, are we talking about like a few millimeters?
The
or?
Butter? Yeah. I mean, the butter, basically, once you cut it into cubes and start like pounding it and rolling it out, we're talking very, very thin. Your butter layer is very thin. Not like, you know, not like so thin it's melting, but like that's the trick, right? Like the butter is literally like getting warmer and warmer as you keep working with it. So it's really tricky not to touch it while you're trying to roll it. I have like, I don't know, a million different rolling pins, but the one that I really should have splurged and gotten like a marble pin because that would help to keep it cold. But I have a wood pin that has handles on the side, just like your normal rolling pin. So I use that so that my hands wouldn't touch the butter. And still, like, because of the kitchen lights or whatever, it was just getting warmer and warmer. So it was kind of, I put it in between two layers of wax paper. Probably should have used parchment at the time. We were kind of in a hurry. I was like, the butter, it is melting. Let's just roll it out. So put it in between two pieces of wax paper. It did its job. It got to this weird rectangle shape. And then you bring the dough out. Right. So like, now you're ready. So you take the dough out, and at that time it's like 12 by 20 basically. And it's gotten puffy while it's been in the fridge, like it's puffing up. So now you put the butter square or rectangle into, you put it right on top of the dough rectangle. Now you have rolled the dough rectangle out a little bit longer. And now you fold the dough and the butter thing like an envelope. So one fold in from one side and then one fold in from the other side. So it's sitting like a little three. Yeah, like a letter.
Like a delicious brochure.
Like a delicious threefold brochure about your life and how you want it to be. Right. So you do that. You then put it in the fridge.
Interesting that our stationery words are imported from the French. Because
like,
enveloppe and brochure.
Yeah.
These are all French words. They're not Anglo-Saxon words.
That's amazing. Since we're making French things. Yes. How about that?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's really a surprise. Or, I don't know, a happy coincidence. So you do that three more times, each an hour apart. Each time you're putting it back into the freezer or the fridge. So basically roll it out, fold it again. And that's what's making the layers of dough and butter. And also with the butter, you got to add a little flour into the butter. Basically, the way he describes it in the book, I really liked. He said, you're trying to make the butter like the same pliable consistency that the dough is, which I thought that's a really good description. And now I know what my butter should kind of like do. Like, if it's melting all over the place, you're doing it wrong. So, like, the butter has to be pretty cold when you start working with it. So, once you've done that, the rolling and the folding, like, three times, then you put it in the freezer for an hour or two. I just opted for the 1 hour. Then, if you're now you're gonna like go to bed or whatever overnight, you can bake them right then. Like you could take it out of the freezer, like roll it out, make your cuts, and bake them. But I was sleepy because it was 12:30, so I went to bed, and then in the morning, it was in the refrigerator all night, and it was very like it got really puffy. It was probably like, I think their thing that they said in the recipe is right. It's about 2 inches tall. It was probably about 2.5 inches tall by like 8 inches wide and 12 inches long. So now when you're ready to bake it, you have to take this tiny ass folded up package that's like 8 by 12 and roll it into 18 by 24. Can I just tell you? I am really glad I'm doing kettlebells every night because it took a lot of muscle to roll out this stiff ass, cold ass dough. Like to keep rolling it, like to get it to 24 inches long was really, really difficult. But
Like physically labor intensive.
yeah,
Like
like I was, it was like a workout, and I made like my husband take over for a hot second. I was like, "Look, can you come in here and use your big muscles to like roll this dough?" He did great. Yeah, he is my bread and dough helper all the time. It's great.
Aww.
Yeah, no, he's really into it because I mean, he gets to reap the benefits. So he was the one that was like, "You should learn how to make croissants." I'm like, "Should I?" About like midway through this process, I'm like, I don't know if I'm doing this again, but of course I can't wait to do it again. But long story short, then once you've got it rolled out to this magic size that I didn't quite get to, like it was still, it needed to be a little thinner, I think, but like the dough was very springy, so every time you roll it out, it just like would kind of spring back to the shorter length. I was like, well, it's gonna have to be okay at 22. I don't think I can get another 2 inches out of this dough, but it was fine. Then you make a series of like, I would say, 45 degree angle cuts in the dough. Well, you divide the dough in half lengthwise, then you cut it. And again, I can show pictures, but you cut it like little triangles. So like one cut down, one cut up in a little triangle, like crescent rolls look like before you roll them up. That's exactly what it looks like. So then you roll them up just like you would a crescent roll, kind of try to bend them in on the corners and put them on parchment paper. And they were already kind of porky. They were already pretty plump. And then you let them rise in a warm room for 2 more hours. So basically, if you want a croissant right away, you need to just go buy one because you are waiting like 2 days for these croissants, is what I'm saying to you. So after the 2 hours is done, you put them in a 425 degree oven for 30 minutes, and the magic happens. Oh, you do hit them with an egg wash
Oh
before
yeah.
they go in. But let me just tell you, very pleased with the lamination results. I got just as many layers as I wanted. It was very layery. Very flaky. The top through the top crust, inside was done, but these have a consistency more like a, my husband said dinner roll. I didn't think they're quite dinner roll-ish, but they're definitely not as light as a traditional croissant. Now, I don't know if that is my mistake or their recipe. They did call to use bread flour, and I used all purpose because I did not have the time to get bread flour. So I think, honestly, the next recipe I'm going to try, you don't have to use a sourdough starter. Most of the time you use just the poulish, which is just yeast, water and bread, or sorry, water, flour, and yeast. So I think I want to try just a traditional recipe that's not with sourdough starter to see if that gives me a lighter flake because I was a little, I mean, not terribly disappointed. They're still really, really good, but they're more like, it's almost like if you wanted to put a sa sandwich stuff on this, it would be good. They're very, I don't know, like, I don't want to say hefty, but they're like, it's like you're eating a piece of bread. I don't know. But still, I mean, delicious. Outstanding.
That is so intense. Obviously, I'm super impatient. I would be really over this entire process.
Yes.
So what would you say about, because, I mean, sourdough, it sounds like it's very similar in that it's a multi-hour, perhaps multi-day process. So how, you're much more patient than I am, but it still seems that, like, when you're making this, there's always those moments of panic or struggle where you're like, oh, shit, I put this in the fridge and then I went about my life and now I gotta, like, drop everything and go back to this. Or, you know, those awkward amounts of time where you're just sitting there waiting or you're doing something else. You know, like, how do you sort of, as a meditative practice, what is this process like? And was it a struggle or do you enjoy having it be this drawn out process? Or talk me through the psychology, like the 12 steps of croissant
the
grief.
Of waiting for dough. You know, since I've made bread most of my adult life, for sure, in some form or fashion. Now, it hasn't always been sourdough. I make a pretty mean, like, cinnamon type brioche loaf. But, like, I've made certain kinds of bread for a long, long time. And I know there's always going to be the thing you have to start with. And that usually happens the night before. There's always going to be the time to rise. You know, even if you're making just like a quickish bread, I mean, not like an actual quick bread, like banana bread or something like that, but like, you know, like a dilly bread or whatever, like rolls or whatever, there's always going to be some amount of time involved where you're waiting. So for me, like, the pandemic has been the perfect, I guess, excuse/opportunity for me to really stretch my boundaries of what I was comfortable with doing, hence the sourdough, because I'm here at the house all the time. I mean, I don't really run errands anymore. I have things, you know, brought to me like a fancy lady. But, you know, so there's not been like a thing where, well, oh, I got to go somewhere, but I got to be home for the bread. Like, I'm here all the time, so it doesn't matter. So what I did last night and what I usually will do is, like, you know, finish up my gardening or go sit outside because it's beautiful right now. Or, like, yesterday, because it was late at night and I knew my husband wanted to go to bed, like, I did some meditation for one of the hours that I was waiting. So, like, structuring my time, it hasn't been that big of a deal for me since I'm home a lot. It might be a different story if I was still out, like, in the world doing shit, like, you know, before COVID times. And it might, you know, it might be a case where I have to sacrifice that time if I want delicious bread. So the bad thing is we're really used to having it now. And I make 4 loaves at a time. We usually give one away. This is all part of the sourdough episode, but whatever. Like, either way, I try to share these baked goods with friends that live here, or friends from far away. I mail stuff to people. So, like, the benefit kind of outweighs my need for wanting to, like, go do other stuff. But you totally could at a certain time. I think, like, croissants seem to be a little bit more forgiving, but it's almost like you have to, for sourdough, you have to be there every half hour for the first, you know, two hours. So it's kind of like you really, yeah, you can't leave. Or if you're going to leave, it better be someplace close. So it's kind of great because San Diego, I mean, everything's maybe anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes away. So you're not, like, going on long trips anywhere just to get to the store. Like, you know, it felt like in Dallas, like, anywhere I would go would take, like, at least 30 minutes to get in my car, go to the place, out of the car, do the thing, whatever. But so, I don't know, watch movies, meditate, write. Like, I've been doing a lot of work on the weekends too, which hasn't been great, but it's been like a thing I can do in the meantime while I'm waiting for dough. So yeah, that's a good question though. I guess since I'm just home, you know.
This is kind of my neurosis, but I feel like and this is why I gravitate more towards cooking than baking, because cooking, you can, you know, monitor the progress of it as you're going. You know, if something's on the stovetop and, you know, I can wait for things to cook or brown or soften or whatever, but I can constantly be gauging the flavor.
Right.
You know, I can add whatever I need. I can adjust the consistency as I'm going. And so I'm like constantly able to get a feel for how this is going.
Right.
Whereas baking is, you kind of are just doing chemistry and you don't know if it's gonna be good until it comes out of that oven. Like, you can't have a little nibble of raw dough and have any idea of how it's gonna be after you bake it. So,
well,
to me, it seems...
Go ahead.
But, well, sorry, I was just gonna say, for me, like, the impatience would be then amplified because I feel like I'm doing these hours and hours and hours of work, and what if it turns out to be horrible, you know? And then I'm like, oh God. And then I've waited all this time and I wasted all this time because, you know, I have like, I get very bejiggity about the end result and wanting it to be perfect, which tends to cause me to procrastinate or not to even want to get started. So it seems like that would be so daunting for me to know that I'm spending all this time on something and I have no ability to gauge how it's going. Like, you talking about, oh, I felt like this dough was like too stiff, but I just decided to like have faith in this recipe and go with it. Like, that would make me insane. That would make me just want to like tear the page out of the cookbook and rage quit.
I will say this, I think like all of those points are valid and hard. I agree. It is like, you know, science. And for those of us that, or at least for me, who I'm not really into a whole lot of research, like I just need one really good recipe to show me how to do something. And then, you know, if it turns out the first time, great, I can run with it. But, you know, there have been times where I've like, things haven't turned out the exact, you know, way it did the last time. And the problem with baking is there is so many variables that it is very hard to decide which step you fucked up. So like, and also weather, I mean, who knew? Like, and the day could be exactly the same, but the barometer has to, like, it affects the dough. I made dough the other day that it was like, you know, nice outside, like maybe 70. But because it was more humid than it's been all winter, like, the dough was, like, so soupy. Like, you wouldn't think, it's the same fucking ingredients. How can this be? And so then, like, you start second-guessing, like, all of your steps. Well, like, did I use X, you know you use the right proportions. So it's not a matter of proportions. It's like, well, should I be using a different flour? Was my water not warm enough? Well, you know, it's like, what the fuck? Like, you don't ever know which step is the one that has produced a different result. So, like, at first, when I was first starting out baking, like, I would just be like, well, next time I'm going to change this step. And my husband was really right when he said, like, just change one thing each time so you know that, like, that's your control. And so that's what I've kind of done through the whole sourdough process. And since this was my first time doing croissants, I've already got like things I want to do differently next time. And I have no doubt that I'll try to make this recipe again, you know, maybe at a different time of year or whatever. I do want to try a different recipe, but like, just, I don't want to be afraid just because it's such a long process. Let me tell you what, they still look and taste absolutely delicious. So no process issue is really going to affect, like, it, like you said, it might not be the perfect thing, but remember how we always said, like, sometimes you just have to do the thing and stop obsessing about the perfection of it. Like, that's kind of what I'm doing with baking. Oops, sorry. So yeah, it is frustrating and a little disappointing when things don't come out exactly the way you had pictured. Like, I didn't want them to be, you know, heavy, like a roll or something. I wanted them to be light and airy, just like every croissant I've ever eaten. I mean, but the layers are beautiful and the taste is flavorful. So shit, man, for a first try, I will take it. And I think that's the thing. You just have to let go of that needing it to look like every croissant you've ever seen in a bakery. Like, I'll get there. You know, I have to believe.
This is why we need to go into the future and have taste-a-vision and smell-a-vision. Like, agreed. I like being able to see and hear things from miles and miles away, but I really need to be able to put this fucking croissant in my mouth right now.
I will say this, like, I have never made croissants, so I did not know what to expect as far as smell when they were baking. It is the best smell, and I love fresh baked bread smell, don't get me wrong, but this croissant smell is like nothing I have ever smelled. It smells like when you walk into the mall that, like, the Aunt Annie's pretzel place is. Like, it smells like that, but, like, better.
That, like, kind of, like, yeasty,
buttery,
but sweet.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, a tad, there's, like, a sour note in there, but it's overwhelmingly, I don't know, it's just, like, a very particular smell. If I could bottle it and make it perfume, I would. It was just amazing. So that part was super fun. And that's kind of like, the smell is kind of what I live for, and then I eat it, and it was delicious. I made fancy butter. My mom was like, you gotta make the strawberry butter. I'm like, what? You take butter and strawberry jam, smash it up together while the butter's, you know, kind of not melty, but like soft. Smash it up together, and then you form it back into I formed it into a tube, and then I ran it through like a cookie cutter. It's like a tiny cookie cutter. So it was in saran wrap, and I pulled the tube of butter through this round cookie cutter that kind of has a clover pattern around it that you would normally like cut out the center of a cookie or something, like a Linzer cookie center.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled the butter tube through that. So it's now like when it gets really cold, it'll slice to this little flower of pink butter, and you can put
oh my
it
God.
On your croissant. And it's
God, that sounds like fucking heaven.
It's really good.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry.
I want to punch you. That sounds so amazing.
Trust me. But have you ever, like, I wanted to punch the wall. It was so good. Like, it was really good. Oh, man. It was delicious. So, and it made 20, which I was surprised because it said it only made 16. And that was also, like, I read the whole recipe, like, two or three times. I was like, I'm only getting 16 croissants out of this. This really fucking, like, that seems like a really small payoff for all of this work. It's like a 5-page recipe. But 20, I'll take an extra 4. That's cool. I don't know. And they were real big when they were in the oven. Man, they puffed up like they were super big. But I don't know, man. I'm doing it again. I will. And I will report back.
Well, let me applaud your bravery for attempting to do it, because I fucking love a croissant.
It was
and
a
that
giant
sounds
fear,
so
though.
Intense.
It really was. Well, once I got going, though, it was just like, oh, it's really just rolling out dough. Is that, I mean, this is like, that's your problem. Like, you got to roll this dough, and that's not that bad. Like, getting the butter into a rectangle, there's probably like YouTube clips out there for how to make that part go a little easier. Since it was so late at night, I couldn't like pound the shit out of it, but probably pounding the shit out of it would be all right. If you were just like, you know, in a house that wasn't like, we don't have, like, our neighbors can probably hear us sneeze. So I didn't want to be like, bang, bang, bang.
I bet if you brought them the croissants later, though, they would be like, all is forgiven.
Probably. That's probably going to be my tactic next time. Because I do want
to try.
They're like,
shit, if you need to beat it on my fucking forehead to make this happen, I will lay down and let it occur.
Oh my God.
Because, fuck, croissants. They're just so delicious. It just seems so impossible that human hands could make them in their home. Like, you're like, there has to be some kind of, like, cutting edge science or sorcery involved.
I didn't want to know what kind of wizard decided that, like, butter should go on dough and then just fold it a million times and you'll get this amazing thing. Like, who was the genius that thought of that? And I need to, like, talk to them because I want to know, how was that just an accident? Were you trying some shit out? Like, how did you get there? Like, I bet that's, I bet I can read about that. I bet that.
You know what? Yeah, you should read about it, but you should also, like, contact, like, the spirit of chefs.
Oh, my God.
And, like, because we did that one time, Brandon and I, is we were doing, you know, channeling chat roulette. Yeah. And I was, because I named my cat Chimera, he goes by Miro, but he's Chimera. And I was like, I don't know a lot about, like, obviously, I'm into sphinxes because of that whole Sphinx of Black Quartz, judge my vow thing. That's like a, it has all the letters of the alphabet. So I use that sentence to test out fonts and stuff when I'm doing graphic design. But don't know a lot about chimeras, honestly.
Right.
And so we were trying, Brandon was trying to channel one and it was not happening because they're like, channeling animal kind of spirits and mythological creatures is hard because they're like, I don't want to be in a human shape. I'm much right. bigger and wilder than that. And then for it to be something that's like three different animals, it was just not happening. So I decided to channel a Greek priestess that could like tell us about them, which was a really, I was like, oh, that's a genius idea. And she was great. And I need to talk to her more because she was loads of fun. But you should totally do that with, like, chefs and cooking and stuff. Like, I mean, why not? Like, it doesn't have to be weird woo-woo fantasy, like, Greek mythology shit.
Right.
You know? Like, channel some darling, like, grandmama in Provence from, like, 600 years ago and have her tell you about her secret baking techniques.
Yeah, because there's got to be, like, but, you know, when you think about it and you think about things like croissants and things like sourdough, the fact that it's kind of an ancient practice makes a lot of sense because, I mean, people weren't really going places then, you know, you wouldn't be, like, worried about, oh, well, I have to get back in order to make this bread happen. You would just be...
Yeah, I'm never going to go further than 15 miles of where I was born in my life.
Right,
so.
Exactly. So, like, the worry about what to do, you know, if you're not there in time. And also, like, I don't know. I wanted to... Well, we can still talk more about sourdough. But, like, the process, it's strangely forgiving, which I wasn't expecting. I thought for sure, like, if I fuck up one thing, it's just trash and, you know, throw it on the fire. It sucks. You can't, you know, just throw it away. Not true. I mean, bread is still bread and it's still edible. The holes may not look like you want it or it may be more dense. It still makes toast, man. Shit is good. Just saying.
Yeah. Just bake that shit again. Toast.
Bake it again. Just fucking fry it up. I don't know, but it was definitely a process. I am a little, like, emotionally wiped because it's very, like, just because I am patient and everything doesn't mean I don't, like, want a perfect result. Of course I want that, but I have, that's, you know, talk about, like, shadow lessons. I mean, just letting that go, letting that part that wants it to be perfect right out the gate first time, like, knowing that about myself and knowing that that may not be what happens, like, well, that's a lot better than beating myself up about it when it's not, you know? So I don't know.
Well, I think that this was a really good chat to just check in with you and see what you were doing this week.
Yes.
And on the surface, it did not seem super witchy, but I think that there's so much, particularly with baking, it's just fascinating to me. And like you said, like, there's a lot of shadow work. Like, I have revealed a lot of my own issues that have nothing to do with bread, but have everything to do with things that, like, stress me out and make me neurotic, that intimidate me to try baking. And so, yeah. So So
I think I'm
surprised at how witchy that this conversation really got. Yeah. So I'm glad it did, because that's supposed to be what this podcast is about. So
yep. It's all right. We're here to bring bread into our witchcraft and treehouses. I think it's pretty fucking magical. I think we should plan on taking croissants to the treehouse.
Fuck yes! Oh my god, get this woman a Nobel Prize.
I will bring the strawberry butter.
Fuck yes.
And the croissants.
Well, I think because what was interesting about the treehouse is it's really just about like whimsy, yes. You know, like
yeah.
Because I kept telling everybody I'm going to a treehouse this weekend, and like I was saying it as a full on brag, but people were like, "You're what?
Yeah, well.
Like why?" But like. I just wanted to be like a goofy little magical forest child about it and run around in a tree right. And just be like, oh my god, this is so cute. Oh my god, look over here. You know, so just as an exercise in like being free with your own silliness.
Right.
It was very cathartic in that way.
Yeah, and that's, I'm sorry, but that is also witchy as fuck. I mean, to really, like, absolutely. Let go of that inhibition and say, I am curious about XYZ. It's not about being necessarily in some, like, you know, perfectly appointed situation, even though it sounds really charming and adorable. It's more about being in this, I don't know, like, I consider nature pretty magical all by itself. So just, like, being surrounded by that is 100%, like... I don't know, just an awesome thing
well,
to
just
do for
to
your
feel
practice.
Like
yeah.
Just delight of something that's like
right.
You know, that childlike wonder of things just seeming impossibly magic. I mean
I know.
So to be able to capture that feeling is always I think that's kind of the point of everything. And definitely a good recommendation for your birthday. So I had a great time.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to do it. And I hope we can make it a witch trip because that sounds awesome. And I'll bring that dough and we will do some cool shit with bread.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah. All right. Well, 1, 2, 3.
Hocus pocus, bitches.